Thank you all for coming to the final event at the Gloucester Writers' Centre for the 2015 season. Tonight, we're going to hear A Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas, performed by some of Gloucester's finest children. And we will be accompanied by Miss Bobby Wayne on the harp. She is a participant in our writers' groups here, and we're very happy. This is the first time I've seen her with her harp.
Yeah.
And it's really great because we hear a lot about her harp. It's wonderful. So I think without further ado, much to the chagrin of the two eldest and the joy of the four youngest, shall I introduce them before or after?
Yeah.
I think before. We have Lila Olson. I was waiting for the applause to end. Willa Brosnahan. Sam Cook. Thea Cunningham. Abigail Cook. Loudly and slowly they read once they stop laughing. I just want to give them a moment.
One second. Okay.
Good King Wenceslas looked and Wenceslas looked the feast of Stephen. When the smell lay round about,
Deep and even,
brightly shone the moon at night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel. Good King Wenceslas looked down on the feast of Stephen. When the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even, brightly shone the moon at night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
One Christmas was so much like another. In those years round the seatown corner and out of all sound except the distant speaking of voices I sometimes hear in the moment before I sleep. That I can never remember if it's snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or whether it's snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases rolled down toward the two-tongued sea like a cold headlong moon bundling down the sky that was a street. And they stopped at the rim of the ice-edged, fish-freezing waves. And I plunged my hands into the snow-white, green, or whatever I can find. And in goes my hand into that full white, bell-tongued ball of holidays, resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea. And there comes Mrs. Prothero, and the firemen.
It was on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, and I was in Miss Prothero's garden waiting for cats with her son Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December is my memory, is white as a Lapland. Though there were no reindeers, but there were cats. Patient, cold, callous, our hands wrapped in socks, we waited to snowball the cats. Sleek among his jaguars and horrible whiskers, spitting and snarling, they would slink and slide over the white back garden walls, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped and moccasin trappers from Hudson Bay of Mubbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the green of their eyes. The wise cats never appeared. We were so still, Eskimo-footed Arctic marksmen, in the muffling silence of eternal snows, eternal ever since Wednesday, that we never heard Miss Prothero's first cry from her igloo at the bottom of the garden. Or if we had heard it at all, it was just to us like the far far-off challenge over enemy and prey, the neighbors pulled their cat. But soon the voice grew louder. Fire! Miss Porter called as she beat the dinner gong. And we ran down the garden with snowballs in our arms toward the house. And smoke indeed was pouring out of the dining room. And the gong was bombarding. And Miss Porter was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats and whales standing on the wall in a row. We bounded into the house, lighted up the snowballs, and stopped at the open door of the smoke-filled room. Something was burning, all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Poitro, who was always slept there after midday dinner with a newspaper over his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room saying, "A fine Christmas," and smacking the smoke with a sliver. "Call the fire brigade," called Miss Poitro as she beat the gong. They won't be there," Mr. Porthos said. "It's Christmas." There was no fire seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Porthos standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting. "Do something," he said, and we threw snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Porthos and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance, and Ernie Jenkins. He likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade. As soon as the fire engine came, and three tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Porthos got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have a noisier Christmas Eve, and when the firemen turned off the hose, we were standing in a wet, smoky room. Jim's aunt, Miss Porthos, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited very quietly to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing, always. She looked at the three tall firemen with shining helmets standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs and said, "Would you like anything to read?"
Years and years ago, when I was a boy, when there were wolves and whales and birds the color of red flannel petticoats whisked past the harp-shaped hills, when we sang and wallowed all night and day in caves that smelt like Sunday afternoons in damp front farmhouse parlors, and we chased with the jawbones of deacons, the English and the bears, before the motor car, before the wheel, before the Duchess-faced horse, when we rode the daft and happy hills bareback, it snowed and it snowed. But here, a small boy says,
"It snowed last year, too. I made a snowman, and my brother knocked it down, and I knocked my brother down, then we had tea."
"But that was not the same snow," I say. "Our snow was not only shaken from white wash buckets down in the sky, it came shawling out of the ground and swam and drifted out of the arms and hands and bodies of the trees. Snow grew overnight on the roofs of the houses like a pure and grandfather mountain. Minutely ivied the walls and settled on the postman, opening the gate like a dumb, numb thunderstorm of white, torn Christmas cards."
"Were there postmen then too?"
"With sprinkling eyes and wind-cherried noses, on spread, frozen feet, they crunched up to the door and mittened them manfully. But all that the children could hear was the ringing of bells."
"You mean that the postman went rat-a-tat-tat and the doors rang?"
"I mean that the bells that the children could hear were inside them."
"I only hear thunder sometimes, never bells."
"There were church bells, too."
"Inside them?"
"No, no, no. In the bat-black, snow-white belfries, tugged by bishops and storks. And they rang their tidings over the bandaged town, over the frozen foam of the powder and ice cream hills, over the crackling sea. It seemed all the churches boomed for joy under my window, and the weathercocks crew for Christmas on our fence."
"Get back to the postman."
"They were just ordinary postmen, fond of walking dogs, walking and dogs, and Christmas and the snow. They knocked on doors with blue knuckles.
Ours got black knuckles.
And then they stood on the white welcome mat in the little drifted porches, and huffed and puffed, making ghosts with their breath, and jogged from foot to foot like small boys wanting to go out."
"And then the presents?"
"And then the presents, after the Christmas box. And the cold postman with a rose on his button nose tingled down the tea tray, slithered run up the chilly, glinting hill. He went in his ice-bound boots like a man on fishmonger's slabs. He wagged his bag like a frozen camel's hoof. dizzyingly turned the corner on one foot, and by God, he was gone.
Get back to the presents.
There were the useful presents, engulfing mufflers of the old coach days, and mittens made for giant sloths, zebra scarves of a substance like silky gum that could be tug-of-war down to the galoshes, blinding tam-o'-shanters like patchwork tea cozies, and bunny-suited bushbies and balaclavas for victims of head-shrinking tribes, from aunts who always wore wool neck to the skin. There were mustache and rasping vests that made you wonder why the aunts had any skin left at all. And once I had a little crocheted nose bag from an aunt, now, alas, no longer whinnying with us. And a pictureless book in which small boys, though warned with quotations not to, would skate on Farmer Giles Pond, and did, and drowned. And books that told me everything about the wasp, except why.
What's the useless presents?
Bags of moist and many-colored jelly babies, and a folded flag, and a false nose, and a tram conductor's cap, and a machine that punched tickets and rang a bell. Never catapult, once by mistake that no one could explain, a little hatchet, and a celluloid duck that made, when you pressed it, a most unduck-like sound, a mewing moo that an ambitious cat might make who wished to be a cow.
Wow.
And a painting book in which it could make grass, the trees, and the sea, and the animals any color I pleased. And the still the dazzling sky blue sheep were grazing in the red fields under the rainbow-billed and pea-green birds. Hard-boiled, toffee, fudge, and all sorts, crunches, cracknels, humbugs, glaciers, marzipan, and butter Welsh for the Welsh, and troops of bright tin soldiers who, if they could not fight, could always run, and snakes, and families, and happy ladders, and easy hobby games for little engineers, complete with extractions. Oh, easy for Leonardo. And a whistle to make the dogs bark, to wake up the old man next door, to make him beat on the wall with a stick, to shake our pictures off the wall. And a packet of cigarettes. You put one in your mouth, and you stood at the corner of the street, and you waited for hours, in vain, for an old lady to scold you for smoking a cigarette. And then, with a smirk, you ate it. And then it was breakfast under the balloons.
Were there uncles, like, in our house?
There are always uncles at Christmas, the same uncles. And on Christmas morning, with dog-disturbing whistle and sugar fags, I would scour the swatch town for news of the little world, and find always a dead bird by the post office or by the white deserted swings. Perhaps a robin, all but one of his fires out. Men and women waiting or scooping back from chapel, with taproom noses and wind-bust cheeks, all albinos, huddles their stiff black jarring feathers against the ill-religious snow. Mistletoe hung from the gas brackets in all the front parlors. There were sherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoons, and cats in their furabouts watched the fires, and the high-heaped fire spat, all ready for chestnuts and the mewling pokers. Some few large men sat in the front parlors without their collars, uncles almost certainly, trying their new cigars, holding them out judiciously at arm's length, returning them to their mouths, coughing, then holding them out again as though waiting for the explosion. And some few small aunts, not wanted in the kitchen, nor anywhere else for that matter, sat on the very edge of their chairs, poised and brittle, afraid to break, like faded cups and saucers.
Not many of those mornings trod the piling streets. An old man, fawn bowlered, yellow-gloved, and, at this time of year, with spats of snow, would take his constitutional to the white bowling green and back, as he would take it wet or fire on Christmas Day or Doomsday. Sometimes two hale young men, with big pipes blazing, no overcoats, and wind-blown scarves, would trudge, unspeaking, to the forlorn sea, to work up an appetite, to blow away the fumes, who knows, to walk into the waves until nothing of them was left but the two furling smoke clouds of their inextinguishable briars. Then I would be slapdashing home, the gravy smell of the dinners of others, the bird smell, the brandy, the pudding and mince coiling up to my nostrils, when out of a snow-clogged side lane would come a boy, the spit of myself, with a pink-tipped cigarette and the violet past of a black eye, cocky as a bullfinch, leering all to himself. I hated him on sight and sound, and would be about to put my dog whistle to my lips and blow him off the face of Christmas, when suddenly he, with a violet wink, would put his whistle to his lips and blew so stridently, so high, so exquisitely loud that gobbling faces, their cheeks bulged with goose, would press against their tinseled windows, the whole length of the white echoing street. For dinner, we had turkey and blazing pudding, and after dinner, the uncles sat in front of the fire, loosened all buttons, put their large moist hands over their watch chains, groaned a little, and slept.
Mothers, aunts, and sisters scuttled to and fro, bearing tureens. Aunt Bessie, who had already been frightened twice by a clockwork mouse, whimpered at the sideboard and had some elderberry wine. The dog was sick. Aunt Josie had to have 3 aspirins, but Auntie Hannah, who liked to put, stood in the middle of the snowbound backyard singing to like a big bosomed thrush. I would blow up balloons to see how big they would blow up to, and when they burst, which they all did, then uncles jumped and trembled in the rich and heavy afternoon, the uncles breathing like dolphins and the snow descending. I would sit among the festoons and Chinese lanterns and nibble dates and try to make a model metaphor, following the instructions for little engineers, produce what might be mistaken for a seagoing tram car. Or I would go out, my bright new boots squeaking in the white world, onto the seaward hill to call on Jim and Dan and Jack, and to pad through the still streets, leaving huge footprints on the hanging pavements.
I bet people will think there's been hippos.
What would you do if you saw a hippo coming down on a street?
I'd go like this, bang. I'd throw him over the railings and roll him down the hill, and then I'd tickle him under the ear and he'd wag his tail.
What would you do if you saw 2 hippos? I'm flanked below. The hippos clanked and battered through the scudding snow toward us as we passed Mr. Daniel's house.
Let's post Mr. Daniel a snowball in his letterbox.
Let's write things in the snow.
That's right, Mr. Daniel looks like a spaniel over his lawn.
Or we walked on the white shore. Can those fishies see it snowing?
The silent, one-clouded heavens drifted onto the sea. Now we were snow-blind travelers lost on the North Hills, and vast dewlap dogs with flasks around their necks ambled and shambled up to his big Excelsior. We returned home through the poor streets, where only a few children fumbled with bare red fingers in the wheel-rutted snow, and catcalled after us, their voices fading away as we trudged uphill into the crash of the dock burns and the hooting of ships in the whirling bay. But then, at tea, the recovered uncles would be jolly, and the ice cake loomed in the center of the table like a marble grape. Auntie Hannah laced her tea with rum because it was only once a year. Bring up the tall tales now that we told by the fire as the gaslight bubbled like a diver. Ghosts wooed like owls in the long nights when I dared not look over my shoulder. Animals lurked in the cubbyhole under the stairs and the gas meter ticked. And I remember that we went singing carols once when there wasn't the shaving of a moon to light the flying streets. And at the end of a long road was a drive that led to a large house, and we stumbled up the darkness of the drive that night, each one of us afraid, each one holding a stone in his hand in case, and all of us too brave to say a word. The wind through the trees made noises as of old and unpleasant, and maybe web-footed men were reasoning in caves. We reached the black bulk of the house. What shall we give them? Hark the herald?
No, Jack said. Good King Wenceslas. I'll count 3. 1, 2, 3. And we began to sing, our voices high and seemingly distant, in the snow-belted darkness round the house that was occupied by nobody we knew. We stood close together near the dark door.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen.
and then a small, dry voice, like the voice of someone who has not spoken for a long time, joined our singing. A small, dry, eggshell voice from the other side of the door. A small, dry voice through the keyhole. And when we stopped running, we were outside our house. The front room was lovely. Balloons floated under the hot water bottle gulping gas. Everything was good again, and it shone over the town. Perhaps it was a ghost, Jim said. Perhaps it was trolls, Dan said, who was always reading. Let's go in and see if there's any jelly left, Jack said. And we did that.
Always on Christmas night there was music. An uncle played the fiddle, a cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had gotten onto the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then another in which she said her heart was like a bird's nest. And then everybody laughed again, and then I went to bed. Looking through my bedroom window, out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from them up the long, steady falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the clothes and holy darkness, and then I slept.